Hello everyone, let us continue our journey and understand the different IT frameworks that are needed to develop applications. So we will now discuss an important topic, which is SOA, middleware and workflow. So SOA is a service oriented architecture. So basically this topic will not talk about an individual functionality as such, but then we will discuss broader frameworks that are needed so that the applications talk to the respective services and deliver the right throughput. We will also understand how a IT system has to get architected, so in a cohesive framework to adopt to the new technologies, how the coupling has to be to the different elements such as the application, to the database and the other components. So let us understand these in more detail. So as I said, in this chapter we will cover three core components of IT systems. So one is the middleware, the workflow systems and the service oriented architecture. How are they important? We will cover some benefits and use cases of each. So middleware basically is the essential glue that passes the information from the front end web applications to the middleware, or sorry, not to the middleware, to the back end processing. So middleware is the essential glue that knits the various components or systems in an enterprise IT solution. Workflow systems, as you would know by the name, they provide the essential process. So the process flow is obtained through any workflow system as such. And going ahead, the service oriented architecture. So as I mentioned, it is not a functionality as such, but then it is a concept or a framework that enables organization to share the business logics and data amongst the different multiple applications and usage modes. SOA has made possible for organizations to change and respond quickly and cost effectively to the changing market conditions. So as I said, SOA is a broader framework on which the the applications have to be architected so as to have a proper coupling between the different applications. So just consider an example that you have a simple application, a simple functionality as such, so which consists of the front end, that is the web tier, the middleware and the back end, that is the database. So you have the web, app and DB. Now how the entire system has to get architected, how individual systems have to be designed so as to not have a complete dependence on each other, but then it has to be loosely coupled to each other so that even if one of the system misbehaves, then the other system should work independently of each other. So we will discuss about those in the SOA framework. So let us understand the concepts of a software architecture first, and then let us build this logic to understand the service oriented frameworks and the middleware and the workflow systems, right? So it is important to understand what are the basic components of a application, why is it needed for an application to be developed in an agile methodology, how should an application be designed so as to adapt to the changes that are there in the marketplace. And moreover, we will also look at some of the nitty-gritties as to say if there are certain variables that need to be passed to an application, how the application should be designed. So probably I will not deep dive into each and everything, but then at a high level I should be able to give you an overall understanding of the design elements in an application. To go deep in an application, to then it will basically talk about actually the programming languages and discussing the frameworks around it. So let us restrict ourselves to understanding the broader design principles in our application. So most of us have heard about architecture and architects in the context of engineering or civil engineering or construction, right? So suppose if you have to build a house, then you would look at an architect. So by the extension of the same logic, we can very well assume that anything that has to be conceptualized, designed and built, it requires an architect and a proper architectural framework at the conceptual level, so as to not have a myopic vision as such, but then adopt a broader framework where the other components can be linked. So even in the case of software, things have to be architected in a proper way so that small and large software applications can be integrated to one another. So software architecture is a high level structure of a software application, and architecting a software system involves creating a high level structure and documentations of this structure that we discussed. It is a process of defining a structured solution that meets all the business and the technical aspects, at the same time optimizing the performance and security. So security is one of the element that goes all across, right? So it's scaled horizontally, be it the infrastructure or the application, that is the software or the hardware. Security is a thread which links everything. And the other critical point here is of optimization. So when we talk about application performance, it is very important to know that how it has been structured so as to optimize the performance and the throughput. So many times we see that, you know, applications, they are not properly architected, and that is the reason why we say the response time is slow, right? So probably you can relate to this term, the application response is slow, or the application is not functioning properly, it has hung itself, so probably you need to restart that application. So these are all outcomes of a poor architected application. So let us understand why and how they have to be architected. So developing software architecture covers all major decisions about the organizations of the software, the technology selection, the interfaces, how that particular application gets integrated with the other components, and the overall definition of the different subsystems involved in that particular application. The architect also ensures the functionality, the usability, the performance and reuse, and makes the decisions on the technology constraints and the trade-offs, right? So three important points. One is the functionality that the application is supposed to deliver, how it can be reused, and performance we already spoke about. So reusability of the application is something which has to be, you know, dealt with caution. So a particular code, when it is developed, probably can the same code be used somewhere else? So that is the decision that architect has to make. Essentially, the architect ensures that the implementation of the design that conforms to a pattern has been standardized by the company. So you have to architect as per the standardization of the company. So when you build a application, they should be agile in nature, should be able to incorporate the changes, as I said, should be decoupled. Now, what do I mean by decoupled? So say for example, if I have a subsystem in an application, right? And there are, mind you, three or four different subsystems. If one of the subsystem fails, then it should not have an impact on the other. So that is basically decoupling. But then understand, guys, in this kind of scenario that we work, the applications or the subsystems are basically related to each other, right? So you would not see a complete decoupling. But then what is said is that the subsystems or the application that are designed should have a loose coupling between each other, so that, you know, if one of the subsystem fails, it should have a minor impact on the other. Because see, so one of the subsystems, so just to give an example, if an application is designed, it could pass on certain variables to the other subsystem, right? So that is the kind of loose coupling that I was talking about. There should not be things that are hard coded in any application. So rather than that, you should have functions that are designed who could pass on that variable. So you would have seen, or probably you would have heard, things like object oriented programming, right? Now what is that all about? So object oriented programming, it's again a different methodology of a programming, where you say that you don't write a complete application one after the other, but then you invoke certain other objects or applications. So say for example, if I have to add two variables, say A plus B, so rather than mentioning that in my application, I would mention that as a sub application. So say a sub application called sum of the variables, and then I would ask the user to input variable A, I'll ask the user to input variable B. Now how is this in contrast with the single code that I spoke about? So in a single code, everything will run one after the other, whereas in the object oriented approach, since you have created a function for this, you might have different places where the same function can be invoked. So you see what we are trying to do. So we are trying to basically optimize the way in which the application has been coded. Other example could be, so say for example, if you have certain other variables that you need to probably reference in your code, say something like a URL, then rather than hard coding that particular URL, or hard coding is as in actually defining the exact URL, probably you can pass it as a value so that it brings more modularity to the code. So again, continuing to the concepts of software architecture, while many available tools assist in simplifying the task of application development, they do not replace the early conceptualization of design based on the standards in specific requirements. So that is obviously the case, right? So you cannot just have a complete 360 degree shift. So some standardization and conceptualization will still remain. The risks exposed by a poor architecture include a software that is unstable. So we spoke about the application or the software which hangs a lot, or unable to support the existing or future demands, or difficult to deploy or manage. Just to take an example, if you would have done the booking on IRCTC, that is the Indian Railways. So earlier, the booking time was say 10 o'clock, right? So whenever you used to try to log into that system at 10 o'clock, it never used to allow you to log in because there was so much load, so many users at a time trying to log in. But now what they've slowly done is that they've scaled the application. They've actually, you know, optimized the performance so that now if you see the performance, everyone is able to log in. Right, so it's basically modifying that application code, modifying the underlying infrastructure as well, so that the application responds well. Following are a few principles of good software architecture. First, the application should be built for change rather than built to last. So as I said, it should be flexible enough, it should be agile so as to incorporate the changes. Should build in adequate flexibility that enables the application to change over time to address the new requirements. Formalize a model that has the capability to iterate and adapt to the change easily. Identify key engineering decisions right at the beginning and use the information to make the key engineering decisions so that the design is more flexible and less likely to be broken by changes. Right? So it means that whenever you are architecting a particular software or application, you conceptualize it at the very beginning. Ensure that the building blocks are in place and then begin the journey of development. Use of models and visualization as a communication and a collaboration tool. Use design tools, modeling systems such as unified modeling language and visualization where appropriate to help capture the requirements and architect the design decisions and to analyze their impact to share the design effectively with all the stakeholders. So what is this trying to say is that you use certain models which are already existing and they are pre-tested. Use all kinds of collaboration tools. Ensure that the applications are modeled as per the standard and the best practices so that the requirement capturing and the decision makers can be enabled with the rapidly changing environment. The objective of a good application architecture is the bridge between the business requirements and the technical requirements. So on one side there is a business which says that, you know, these are the demands and how business has to scale up. But then from a technical perspective or a architectural perspective, you have to design the application and the backend infra in such a way so as to take the load off the changing business requirements. So the objective is to bridge the gap between the business and the technical requirements by understanding the use cases and finding out ways to implement the use case in the software. As I said, the goal of an architecture should be to identify the requirements that affect the nature of that application, the nature and the structure of that application. A good design is sufficiently flexible to be able to handle the natural drift that will occur over time in hardware, software, and the user requirements. We discussed that. An architect must consider the overall effect of design decisions, right? So he should not consider only the software on which he is working, but then a broader vision in which that particular software has to be architected. So say for example, if I have to take into account the business requirements, then probably there could be trade-offs when we talk about just scaling. So you cannot build an application to scale to infinite limits, correct? So there has to be a trade-off between the proper scalability and the cost. So what we see here is the inherent trade-off between quality attributes and the trade-offs required to address the user, system, and the business requirements. A good architecture reduces the business risk associated with building a technical solution. So as I said, you have to balance all. So should be good on quality, should provide the right kind of business outputs, and should be scalable in nature. But then, as I said, you have to have a proper vision in place and a proper interaction with the business owners to forecast the demand and then architect the solution accordingly. So the objective of good architecture are the best case requirements, long-term organizational focus, reuse consideration. So I gave you example of that A plus B. It's a very trivial one, but then it holds true. So we can probably use it for referencing some other complex models as well. Bring in as much of business wish list as possible, and bringing in the business wish list right at the start, not when the systems are already in place. Because if the systems are in place, then it takes a little time to incorporate those changes. But then if you have the business owners also giving you a proper requirement, then it becomes easy to architect those requirements as a part of the software framework. Anticipate all scenarios and incorporate them. How does architecture differ from a software design? So architecture deals at the cross-domain, cross-technology level, must cover a wider scope and handle a significant amount of uncertainty, right? So a significant amount of uncertainty, because probably the user behavior might change, or there could be changes in the peak load. So I took the example of the railway booking, right? When the peak load is maximum at 10 o'clock. So that is the kind of uncertainty that is referred to. So in such kind of scenarios, if you know that there is going to be peak load at a stipulated time, then probably you have to design some auto scaling of those applications so that they scale up before time and they are able to take that load, or probably have some kind of load balancers in between so that the load balancers could distribute the load in between the different application servers, or have load balancers and the auto scaling work in tandem, right? So that's even a better framework to work with. Architecture sets a reference baseline for designers to work within. Essential characteristics of architecture are its high level view. Architecture realizes all the use case scenarios and presents a systematic view to all the stakeholders. Architecture can be generic and it could be technology agnostic. So you cannot tie it down to a particular technology, right? So you can be either technology agnostic, or probably use a particular technology, but then ensure that the elements such as the scalability, the flexibility, the auto scaling, everything are taken care of. So while architecture faces towards strategy, structure, and purpose, the abstract the designer deals with, the practice and implementation is the definitive, right? So in spite of architectures and architects, most mega organizations have to deal with a proliferation of technologies that don't coexist. So that's where the catch is. If the business owners today decide that a particular application has to be in the ecosystem and you deploy it, but then what about that application talking to the other applications, or how does the infra support that particular application? So it's again a jungle out there, right? So there are so many applications, but then you have to design a framework that is fit for purpose, fit for your organization, and decide what are the different tools that could be used. So it has to have an effective application environment. So while an organization may declare itself, so this is a classic example. While we say that, say, one company is a complete Java shop where all the coding and everything is on, say, JSP, EJB, servlets, and so on, it has to face the challenge that most of the systems could be, say, for example, based on Microsoft technologies. Then how do they integrate? How do they interoperate? Right? So those are the few decisions that the system architect also has to take. So a reference architecture is a blueprint or a set of documents which the IT managers and the designers and the architects may refer for technology preferences, direction, and the best practices. It is recommended that the architecture to be used for selecting the best implementation. So many a times when we look at a software-based rollout, then there are a lot of industry best practices or say some kind of frameworks that come from the defined software architects or the principal architects as we call them, right, in the industry. So say when a typical case, right, so if I have to talk about say architectural deployment, then there are certain validated design guides which come from the best practitioners. There are certain frameworks which help you to model those in place. So say something like a process ITIL compliance or a PRINCE compliance, right? So these help to actually model your architecture so that it works seamlessly well. So now let us go ahead and understand service oriented architecture. So we understood what are the applications, how they have to be architected. Now let us understand what is a service oriented architecture, why is it needed, and what are the building blocks. So a service oriented architecture is a way of designing a software system and its surrounding environment to provide services either to the end user applications, to executable business processes, or to other services through published and discovered service interfaces. So what does it mean is that it's a broad framework in which the application components provide services to other components via probably a communication protocol, so typically over a network. And the principles of service oriented architecture are independent of any product or a technology or a vendor, right? So it's another way of stating that SOA is a way of designing, developing and deploying the managing systems, right? So SOA basically it just makes it easier for the software components over various networks to work with one another. So it's, as I said, it's not a functionality as such. It's a broad framework which in which the application components provide services to individual components. It could be to other services as well. But then the principles of a software oriented architecture is that it should be vendor agnostic, right? It should be product agnostic and technology agnostic. So services provide usable business functionality via well-defined interfaces. So these interfaces are something that are used to connect to the different services. So say if I have an application, it has an interface through which it will connect to the outside world. There is a clear separation between the service interface and the service implementation. So service implementation is the actual implementation of that service, whereas the interface, as I said, is a touch point through which it interacts with the other services. Service consumers are built using the functionality from the available services. An SOA infrastructure enables discovery, composition, and invocation of these services. So one is discovering the services. Second is, and we'll probably dive deep into each of these. So that SOA or the oriented service oriented architecture, what it talks about is how do I discover the different services that give that functionality? How do I invoke those services? So probably how can I access those services? And then how composition, that is how each service is broken down into sub-services and how they are linked to each other is what a SOA talks about. Protocols are predominantly but not exclusively message based document exchanges. So key principles of SOA. So there are certain key principles which include a standardized service contract. So service adheres to a service description. A service must have some sort of description that describes that what the service is all about. So it's basically what the service is all about, and it makes it easier for client applications to understand what does the service do, right? So it should have a basic description to it. So that's a service contract. Then there is something called as loose coupling. So less dependency on each other. This is one of the main characteristic of web services, which just states that there should be as less dependency as possible between the web services and the client invoking the web service. Now, I spoke about loosely coupled versus tight coupled versus decoupling. So what is tightly coupled? Tightly coupled is when, say for example, we are talking about the web service, right? So web service or the front end web, if I have say five different servers of the web, and then there is two different servers of application. If there is a very tight integration between web 1 and app 1, right? So if web 1 fails, that means my app 2 is rendered non-usable. So that's a very tight integration. But then what we say is that you should have a decoupled architecture. That is saying, even if my web 1 instance fails, still my app will not have any difference because I can be serviced by web 2. I know this is sounding a little complex, but then just understand one thing. So say that if there are two components that are talking to each other, if one component fails, the other component also fails. So that is a tightly coupled architecture. If one component fails, the other component keeps on working. That is a decoupled architecture. And what here it is mentioned is the loosely coupled. So that, because loosely coupled is the actual or the practical use case, because two applications cannot, that is the web and the app cannot function without each other, right? So there has to be some coupling, but then what the design principle says is that they have to be loosely coupled, right? So that complete failure in one should not affect the other. Then there is service abstraction. So service should hide the logic that they encapsulate from the outside world. The service should not expose how it executes the function. It should just tell the client application on what it does rather than saying how it does it. So doing the actual job of a function is actually what the service does, right? But then from a service perspective, it does not need to interface or relay this information onto the application saying that this is the actual methodology of what I follow, right? Rather than that, it should be just, so it is saying that it is abstracting that information, but at the same time only giving the output. So that is the design principle. Then there is service reusability. So which talks saying that the logic can be divided into service with the intent of maximizing the reuse. So I give you an example of a simple A plus B, which is a subsystem which can be used anywhere in the code, right? So it is reusable. So in any development company, reusability is a big topic, because obviously one doesn't want to spend a lot of time and effort in building the same code again and again. So if I have to say do addition of A plus B, so everywhere I will not do A plus B. I mean this is a very simple example as such, but then suppose if there's a complex algorithm which says that A plus B, and then there is say a square root, and then there is some other trigonometric function and so on. So basically if there are say 15 to 20 different lines of code which are developed, right, then every time invoking that or writing that as a part of the code is just wasting the time and energy and time it takes to execute. So that's a problem vis-a-vis creating a function and calling that function as and when it is needed. So it adds more modularity to the entire code. So what it says is that in any development company, reusability is a big topic because they don't want to spend unnecessary time and effort in building the same code again and again across multiple applications which require the same functionality. Then there is service autonomy. So services should have control over the logic that they encapsulate. So we talked about service encapsulation, but then they should actually own that logic, that what they are trying to do within the service is the ownership of that service element. Then there is service statelessness. So ideally services should be stateless, which means that say for example, if there is a client that is accessing a particular service or a particular application, right, then the service cannot hold the client state information in themselves. So say for example, the login information, right? So the login information is a function. So a service can be invoked, and that login information from the database could be passed on to the application. But then a particular service who does this job of passing on the login information, it cannot have that information within itself. So that's statelessness. So what it says is that ideally services should be stateless. This means that the services should not withhold any information from one state to the another. And so this is this would need to be done by either the client, from the client application itself. So there is something called as the application based cookies, where the information is stored in the application, and it's the job of that application to hold the state information and not the service. So service should just pass on this login information, but then the application is where the actual logic resides of how that login information has to be processed. Then there is service composability. So service composability basically talks about service to break big problems into smaller problems. So one should never embed all the functionalities of an application into a single service. So as I said, break it down into sub-services. So instead, break the service into modules, each within a separate business functionality. So breaking a service into individual smaller services, it makes the service more modular in nature. It gives more failure adaptive resistance. So if one of the module fails, still the service continues to work, right? So it says that if there is a bigger service, then break it down into smaller chunks, probably link them together. After one service is done, then probably invoke another. So this gives better design to the overall architecture. So service oriented architecture. What are the drivers of SOA? In large organization, the following types of organizational, business and technology challenges drive a desire to reap the benefits of SOA. First is the integration with legacy systems. All companies would have some or the other legacy applications and systems in place. So how a SOA helps to link those legacy systems in your business logic is something that SOA is designed to operate. Corporate mergers. Wow, in case of corporate mergers, we are talking about legacy systems, right? So a company having legacy systems and you're designing new systems to integrate with them. But imagine when there are two companies who are coming together in case of a corporate merger, each would have their own legacy systems in place. So then how do I design my overall software architecture to change or incorporate those systems in place? So that's one of the drivers. Realignment of responsibilities through business reorganizations, right? So when businesses realign, that means the roles, responsibilities are realigned. So in that case, it's a driver for SOA. And the changing business partnerships, we just addressed that. Modernization of obsolete systems for financial, functional or technical reasons, this could be a driver. Acquisition or decommissioning of new software products, as in when new applications are launched, new softwares are launched in the company, how do I integrate that and bring it to a commonly designed framework. Socio-political related or independent drivers as cited above. So these are probably the drivers of SOA.